seated.
Thank you. The second case set for oral argument this morning is Estate of Owen Thacker versus Victoria Tim. A. Jason Rumsa appears on behalf of the appellant estate and will be arguing this morning. And Zachary Peterson appears on behalf of Appley Tim and will be arguing this morning. Each side will have 15 minutes for your initial argument, and then Mr. Rumsa, you'll have a 5-minute rebuttal. You'll get a 2-minute warning light when the yellow light comes on. You may proceed with your argument, Mr. Rumsa.
May it please the court, counsel. The guardian and conservatorship of Owen Thacker in 2019 was initiated after Vicky Tim became uncooperative and questions arose as to why she was shielding her handling of Owen's affairs from his daughter's views. This underlying action was initiated once the shield was lifted and the financial transactions that had been occurring since the end of 2014 came into the light. The estate's brief and reply brief navigate through the voluminous record in this case and provide a roadmap to the citations to the testimony and to the documentary evidence in the record that establishes that mistakes have been made, and that the trial court's findings are against a clear preponderance of the evidence, that clear error occurred. As to the law, the estate is not asking this court to reverse any prior holdings. The estate is simply asking this court to apply the facts established by the record to the law as it exists. Owen's health is relevant to the questions regarding why he added Vicky to his bank accounts in 2013. It's relevant to the question of whether there was an inequality, dependence, weakness, or lack of knowledge with regard to the question of a fiduciary duty and whether a fiduciary relationship existed. And it's also relevant to the susceptibility element of undue influence.
Well, some of these key transactions occurred after he was assessed at Mayo and found not to have a neurological impairment that would affect his capacity.
Yeah, so his assessments at Neuro were, I believe, in August and October of 2014. That's when he was assessed at Mayo. I believe the diagnoses or impressions were gait ataxia, mild cognitive impairment, and left CPA angle tumor. So his Mayo visits were preceding, and really the bulk of all the specialty visits that we lay out in the briefing, those occurred really in 2013, most of them, and then in through 2014 as well. And Mayo was kind of the last one.
So let me follow up with that. As I understand it, I couldn't remember if it was 2014 or 15, but are there any medical opinions in the record after 2015 as to his cognitive ability or function?
I believe in the record there was the record where Vicky Tim called into the Brown Clinic. It was just the call-in was, I think, the record stating that his memory is getting even worse, and this is, I think, December of 2017. His memory is getting even worse. I want to get somebody here to handle something, or, you know, to do something with his memory. And that, I think, was the only record later that was put into the record, because the bulk of the medical issues that he was experiencing in the specialty visits were in 2013 and 2014, save for I think the annual wellness exams. I think those were introduced into the record.
But there was really assessment. No. How about an assessment by a medical professional saying that he's not competent to handle his own affairs or has cognitive?
Yeah, there was nothing in addition to Dr. Knipe's testimony, I suppose, but there was no subsequent evaluations for that purpose.
There was, of course, lay testimony.
Yes.
That came after that period of time.
Yes. There was, yeah, I mean, there was the testimony from the daughters and from Vicki, and I think a couple of her friends testified.
And they all testified to his ability to do those things.
Not necessarily.
What testimony was in the record from even a lay witness that said that he could not handle his own affairs?
His own daughters, okay. Teresa and Angie, and there was significant testimony from them with regard to that. Go ahead.
It seemed like one of the other issues that was noted is the infrequency of their contact with their father. How does that play into how we assess their testimony?
They both attended. So Angie lives in Highmore and Teresa now lives in Oklahoma as of 2010. But they both attended all of the Mayo visits. Teresa was up. I think there was probably, it was painted more as they are distant, but I don't think the full record reflects that they had a distant relationship at all. Even the email from Vicki in May of 2014 says to Teresa, we need to get Angie involved in this. Teresa and Vicki had communicated quite frequently as to Owen's health. After the visit with Dr. Knipe on March 21st or 24th, I think on the 21st, Vicki and Teresa spoke with one another about that and shared their concerns. And Teresa, I think, called the clinic, or Vicki, or they had both called the clinic, had called the clinic. Teresa came up to visit from time to time from Oklahoma. She came up to the farm. I know in August of 2018 there was testimony as regarded that. They didn't have some distant relationship with their father. It was essentially the distance from living in Oklahoma and Highmore, but the phone contacts, there was testimony. I think even Deborah Cain testified about the calls that she was witness to, and I don't know how many calls she was witness to, but the attempts to call and speak with Owen, and I think there's testimony as to this, he's hard of hearing, it's difficult to have phone conversations, they're very short, he was fairly reserved, but it wasn't a distant relationship, and even I think the guardianship court recognized that there was all sorts of free flow of information regarding Owen's health. Where it lacked was the financial information that was requested and ordered to be produced.
In any event, as our discussion, I think, illustrates, we're engaging in a very fact-bound conversation here about the evidence. We're at a disadvantage institutionally, yeah, as a reviewing court, to consider that evidence and relay it, of course. We're really prohibited from doing that. So how is it that there's clear error when there seems to be evidence on both sides of these critical issues?
Well, for example, the findings and conclusions of the court set forth, why is Dr. Knipe's testimony, why should we discount Dr. Knipe's testimony? And I think they set forth six reasons, which I detailed, I think, in the reply brief. And just looking at those findings with the actual record in the reports, which we can view, and they're just not consistent with that. The questions regarding whether there was a confidential relationship or whether there's a fiduciary relationship, those are questions of law. And the court found that there was neither.
So let me ask you about those questions of law, particularly the fiduciary duty. Let's assume we say there's evidence to support what the court did here and there's no clear error. If we make that determination, what happens on the fiduciary duty issue and whether it existed? It's a legal question for us. What fact findings or what
determinations would you make that you think, if you think, still support a determination as a matter of law that there was a fiduciary duty between these two parties?
Well, I mean, the court found that Vicki was never placed on any of Owen's accounts in a fiduciary capacity, that he did so place her on the accounts because he wanted all the sums in those accounts to go to her when he died. Well, the actual question, I mean, the court didn't answer the first question. Was there a fiduciary relationship? The court didn't answer that question.
Right, and that's what I'm asking is what findings, I mean, is if you lose on the question of clear error on the findings, do you lose on the fiduciary duty issue too, or can you still win on that?
I don't think we necessarily lose on the clear error because, again, unless...
Yeah, no, I want you to assume for a minute that you do lose on that. And if you do, what happens to fiduciary duty? Is that resolved then? Is the question of law such that, yeah, there's just no question here that's fiduciary duty based on the court's findings?
I'm not sure I entirely follow, so I apologize on not being able to answer probably as well as you would have hoped. But with regard to the fiduciary duty, I mean, all the facts and reasons why, you know, there was, which the court didn't make, and so I guess in a sense we're asking the court to look at the record and to deduce whatever facts or to remand.
The court did make a factual finding that Ms. Tim and Mr. Thacker were not unequal in position of influence, found that there was no disparity in terms of the equanimity between them. It seems like an important finding for its legal determination of fiduciary duty.
Yeah, and I think it is, and our argument is that there was clear error in that finding. They were not equals in any sense of the word. Maybe they were prior to any of the relevant happenings that were subject to this case, you know, prior to 2013, sure. But in this case, it was Vicki who was setting up all of his medical appointments and attending. It was Vicki who was handling all of his financial affairs since 2013. It was Vicki who was making the appointments with attorney Terry Sutton and the financial advisors. It was Vicki doing all these things for Owen. It wasn't Owen doing any of these things for Vicki. So the finding that they were equals, I mean, I think it's inconsistent with the evidence that was put forth. But so coming back to the fiduciary duty, did a fiduciary relationship exist? There are, to find a fiduciary relationship, we set forth the criteria the court must look at in our briefing. But faith, confidence, and trust, did Owen trust Vicki? Yes, he did, and Vicki testified to that. And I don't think that's really in dispute. Inequality, dependence, weakness, or lack of knowledge. Again, all of Owen's physical and mental ailments, those were Owen's. Those were not Vicki's. Vicki wasn't. The reason Vicki is the one in charge of handling the finances, writing the checks, is because she has the ability to do that. The dominion or control or influence over Owen's affairs, again, she set up all of the medical appointments and attended them. She handled all of the financial transactions that are subject to this. So we have, what the court has set forth, find these three things for a fiduciary relationship. And our position is that existed back in 2013 when she was put on the accounts for the purpose of helping pay the bills, write the checks.
So if we found the court erred in that she should have been found to be a fiduciary, how did she breach? What actions of hers were you contending constitutes a breach of that duty?
Yeah. I would contend that, first, the December 31st, 2014 transaction where she essentially, the day before, after having meeting with Terry Sutton, changed the account relationship status and removed Teresa's name from the accounts. That, for one. And then we set forth all of the various other transactions that would constitute self-dealing. The power of attorney that was ultimately executed but never utilized, that does not authorize self-dealing. And so I think the aggregate sum of the transactions totaled what we laid out, over $500,000. And so I think there's clearly a result showing that she breached in self-dealing or feathering her own nest. All of those, I believe, contribute.
Thank you, Mr. Robson. Mr. Peterson, you may proceed with your argument.
May it please the court, counsel. I'm here today on behalf of Vicki Tim, the appellee in this matter. This appeal concerns the resolution of numerous factual issues by the circuit court and the estate's dissatisfaction with the manner in which the circuit court decided those factual issues. The circuit court had the opportunity to review the documentary evidence, hear the testimony of all the witnesses, and draw conclusions about witness credibility and Owen Thacker's intent in doing the various things about which the estate complains. In doing so, the circuit court found that Vicki neither breached a fiduciary duty, unduly influenced Owen, or converted Owen's property. And those are the three real issues in this appeal, having to do with the fiduciary duty, the undue influence, and the conversion of property, and whether the circuit court committed clear error in her factual findings with respect to those three issues. I want to start with the fiduciary duty claim. What this case is missing that so many others that this court has decided has had is that independent act of self-dealing utilizing the power of attorney. They concede that the power of attorney was never used here. And Vicki's understanding of that document was, well, if Owen ever gets to the point where he can't take care of things on his own, then I have this and can take those things over for him. Well, that never happened. Even up until Owen went into the nursing home in 2018, he was capable of handling his own affairs, and that was the factual finding of the circuit court. And in this case, we also have to look at what actions were taken by Vicki versus what actions were taken jointly with Owen. We have acts by Owen Thacker that show a consistent pattern of wanting to provide for Vicki. You have Owen putting Vicki on the house as a joint tenant in 2002. You have Owen opening CDs in her name in 2006, 2010, 2013. You have Owen adding her to joint accounts in 2013. Again, the circuit court found that that adding of her to those accounts was intended to make her a payable on death beneficiary, not just for convenience.
Did he go to the bank and do that, or did she do it with his knowledge and consent? Did they go together?
They went together, to my understanding. And you also have Owen designating her as the beneficiary on his retirement accounts. And to your point, they went together, and each of these retirement investment or these investment officers conferred with Owen individually and confirmed that his intent was to designate her as the beneficiary on these accounts. So what you don't have in this case is a single document signed by Vicki Tim in which she is acting as POA for Owen Thacker. And the reason for that is simple. Owen and Vicki did everything together. They undertook financial planning together over the years. They consulted each other and made decisions together. It was a collaborative process between the two of them, and that's what the circuit court found. And I would also add, with respect to the fiduciary duty claim, what can't be lost on this court is that a principal can still act with benevolence toward his significant other, even if he designates her as an agent under a durable power of attorney. Otherwise, are we running into a situation where the parent who makes the responsible oldest child his POA, and then is he setting that child up for a claim by the estate if he makes gifts to that child? That can't possibly be the law, and I think that's what the court was trying to sort out in Bronson and Wyman by establishing that you don't have this bright-line rule when a designated power or when a durable power of attorney is granted. Instead, you have to go through the same analysis that the district or the circuit court did here, and you look at the usual test for the establishment of a fiduciary duty. Here, the circuit court correctly considered the facts and found that Owen and Vicki were equals in the time frame in which all of these various things that the estate complains about occurred. The ruling of the circuit court based on those facts should be affirmed. With respect to undue influence, the circuit court did not find that a confidential relationship existed here.
Is that clearly erroneous?
I don't believe it is, given what we have in terms of medical records and the evidence from the people that were close to Owen and Vicki that testified that Owen was just as sharp in 2013, 14, 15, 16, 17, and there was nothing unequal about their relationship.
Is it all that significant, given the fact we are where we are, at the end of a fully submitted evidentiary trial, and presumptions or no presumptions, everybody had an opportunity to present evidence, and the court made its determination. Are we just past that, maybe?
And the next sentence on my outline was, but even to the extent a confidential relationship existed, Vicki rebutted it with ample evidence, and the circuit court found adversely to the estate on every element of undue influence except for the obvious one, which is the opportunity, because they live together.
This is all the burden of memberships, presumptions notwithstanding.
Correct. And to that point, in order to reverse, this court must be left with a definite and firm conviction that a mistake has been made as to all three of the other elements of undue influence: susceptibility, disposition to act with an improper purpose, and a result showing the effects of undue influence. When the court makes a complete review of the evidence, it is to give due regard to the trial court's consideration of witness credibility, the importance of their testimony, and the weight to give to various evidence. And the conflicts in the evidence, which I think is the majority of what we heard from appellant's counsel, are to be resolved in favor of the trial court's determinations. And so, you know, as you go through those factors, again, with susceptibility, the trial court reviewed everything and determined that there really was no issue of susceptibility until after all of the relevant events in the amended complaint had happened. I mean, it was after Owen contracted pneumonia, and I think that was in either late 2017 or early 2018, that there was a shift and the susceptibility came into play. But prior to that, when all of these various transactions were occurring, she did not find that the susceptibility element was met. You know, the estate relies primarily on Dr. Knipe's testimony. You know, there's nothing incorrect about the trial court discounting that testimony. Dr. Knipe saw Owen one time, and the reason for that visit was to assess this issue with instability and his ability to walk and things like that. You know, there was a comment in his note about his ability to remember distant details, but that was not the focus of the visit. You weigh that against, you know, the testimony of the other folks, Jim Wolliver, who said that even after Owen was in the nursing home, he was still very sharp. You weigh that against Deb Caney's testimony that, you know, Owen, you know, remained sharp the whole time she knew him and what you know, interacted with him, which went up through Christmas 2017. You know, it was an error for the court to give limited weight to Dr. Knipe's testimony, considering everything else she heard or read about Owen Thacker in 2013, 14, 15, 16, and 17 when these relevant events were occurring.
Counsel, the one transaction I think that was highlighted that it seems like it might have been in the time frame where there started to be some recognition that he was starting to slip was her transferring, and I think this was even after he went into assisted living, was it a $25,000 amount into an individual, a joint account into an individual account? That appeared to be the only one that might fall within that time frame. Can you address that or what?
I think the trial court agreed that it was a misunderstanding or a mistake that got corrected. And that was based on her assessment of Vicki's testimony about it And, we don't know exactly what happened with the $25,000 to get it from one account to the next. Vicki's recollection was that it was a mistake, that it should have gone in a different account. Mr. Herzog, who works for Edward Jones, his testimony tended to conflict with that. But ultimately, the trial court found Vicki's testimony credible and determined that, you know, it wasn't any kind of a untoward thing or improper act on her part. And so I don't know that there's any reason to disturb that finding when you weigh it against everything else that went on here.
And those funds were returned by Ms. Tim without court intervention?
They were returned the next year, contemporaneously, I believe, with the commencement of the second guardianship action. The final thing I want to talk about with respect to undue influence is the effects, or whether the results show the effects of undue influence. The result here actually squared fairly closely with Owen's stated intentions and his course and history of actions with respect to Vicki Tim. He had a history of, you know, putting her on the house, creating CDs in her name, putting her on the joint account. You know, these things were done because Owen had an intent to take care of Vicki after he passed away.
I haven't had the opportunity to listen to the tape recording yet. Is that significant with reference to that question, what his intent was?
I think it is. And I mean, I think it's clear that he had an intent to take care of Vicki from the beginning. And I think where things went off the rails is that Teresa wanted to put herself in the middle of it and put herself on the accounts. And the trial court found that her recitation of things was such that, like a banker or a lawyer would use, that, you know, Owen went along with, Vicki went along with. Well, after, you know, the writing was on the wall and they were seeing what Teresa was doing and interjecting in their 33-year relationship, you know, the trial court found that Vicki and Owen wanted their privacy. And that's the reason they went and removed or started new accounts without Teresa on them, is because they didn't want her involved in their finances and looking over their shoulder on everything. And so, you know, that was the discussion that followed the initial thing in that recording, which was, your intent is for your cash assets to take care of Vicki. And then what followed was Teresa's recitation that, but you don't want any of this to go to, you know, to stay with Vicki after she dies. And that is the part where Teresa got Owen to agree to put her on the account. Ultimately, that was undone. But I think the point that the court brought up initially was, well, why would this be an unnatural result when these daughters, you know, they didn't spend holidays with Owen. They made phone calls. They visited sparsely. You know, what's not to be lost is that Owen didn't disinherit these girls. They received a $2.5 million farm. And with Owen's stated intent being, I want to take care of Vicki with my cash, you know, it's not an unnatural result showing the effects of undue influence. It's a result that makes a lot of sense. With that, Your Honor, unless there are further questions, I would just respectfully ask that the trial court be affirmed in all respects.
With your rebuttal, 5 minutes.
With regard to the transactions that occurred after the change of accounts on December 31st of 2014, yes, there was the $25,000. That was the biggest one. But there was a total of, counting that, $58,000 of withdrawals. There was additional money wrote off to cash. All of that occurred over the course of those several years. And so this was something that was happening, you know, twice a month. You know, the record shows how many cash withdrawals and transfers from the joint account to Vicki's own personal account there were. And make no mistake, Vicki never utilize, she always kept her separate account from Owen. Just trying to use my time wisely. The finding that the trial court reviewed everything, or the statement that the trial court reviewed everything. That's true, I believe, but even in the court's findings and conclusion, or the findings of fact, the court found that it agrees with Judge Spears in finding that Vicky Tim was credible. The opposite was true. The court found, the guardianship court found Teresa to be credible and Vicky's testimony to be troubling, along with her demeanor in court. And so, sure, the trial court was supposed to have reviewed everything in the record, but looking at that finding and coming to the opposite conclusion,
What significance does that have?
I can't reconcile.
But what significance does that have?
When we're talking about credibility of witnesses, you know, I think that's particularly.
Judge Spears wouldn't be obligated to, even if she got it wrong or she misread Judge Spears' finding, she could independently assess the credibility on her own, surely.
But then it begs the question, why make that finding?
So maybe it was improvident, but my original question is,
sure.
What does that... How does that lead to reversal, in your view?
I think that's just one of the examples of where it where there was a mistake made. With regard to the transactions, and the statement was made, you know, after they had seen what Teresa was doing. Teresa didn't do any transactions when her name was added to the account. It was 6.5 months later, on December 31st, that her name was essentially removed by Vicky. And Vicky's testimony was, why did we do that? I was mad about it, and that's why we talked about it. So it's Vicky and Owen under their shared roof where these conversations are happening. There's no other witnesses to this. Terry Sutton met with them the day before, and he testified. I didn't say anything about the titling of the accounts. Or beneficiary designations. And remember, every beneficiary designation that was changed, it was at Vicky's request. So when we say, well, Owen met with the financial advisors and those were his requests, yeah, those were his requests when he's sitting in front of them. But the reason he's sitting in front of them was because of Vicky and her request that she be changed, or that the beneficiary designations be changed to her.
So why is it, I guess the overarching big picture here, and your opposing counsel just made the argument, even accepting all of that, why is it an unnatural disposition for Owen to want to care and allow his assets to be used by his partner for 30 years when, and when we look at it in the view that the daughters are, as counsel pointed out, getting quite a large inheritance through the farm? Why is that unnatural?
It is not necessarily an unnatural disposition, but it is inconsistent with what he had verbalized in the recording, which you can listen to in June, when it was they wanted to add Teresa's name so that it wouldn't ultimately be money that could be inherited outside of the family. So when the accounts are changed, well, then when Owen passes away, like what happened here, those funds can be inherited by Vicky's family. She can do with those whatever they want. That wasn't what his intent was, and his intent was clear in the recording and the purpose of changing the accounts so that Teresa could be added. I'm about out of time. I would just state that, you know, with regard to the mountain of records there are here, we tried to do our best to, in our briefing to help the court, you know, provide a roadmap to these reasons why the trial court made a mistake. So I appreciate the opportunity to argue this before the court, and that's all I have. Thank you.
I want to thank counsel for your arguments this morning. We'll be in recess for 10 minutes.